I don't know about you, but I have thoroughly enjoyed this trip through the book of Genesis. It's given me a renewed appreciation for spiritual truths, and there are always things that you've seen, even though you think you already know it all. And I really, really deeply appreciate that aspect of that. I want to show you two or three things today that you may not have looked at and may not have appreciated in relationship to this. We've been talking about Jacob, and I want us to get to Joseph and spend much of the rest of the time in this study looking at the life of Joseph. But Jacob gets over, because of the controversy he has with Esau, and because Esau is ready to kill his brother. I don't know if you've ever felt like killing your brother or not. Maybe you were the brother they wanted to kill. I'm not sure which way it was. But he has to flee for his life. Now, he's pulled two tricks on his brother. I guess they're tricks. Esau knew for sure when he sold his birthright what he was doing, didn't understand the consequences of it. He was tricked whenever the blessing was stolen because of the time that Rebekah put goat hair on the back of the hands and the back of the neck and put Jacob inside Esau's clothing. But Jacob arrives over to try to find a wife. And that's why he went over to that land. Esau had married one of the Canaanite women that was there. And it is interesting that Rebekah says, if Jacob does this, then I have wasted my life. Isn't that amazing? Don't you feel that sometimes about your children and everything, that you do the very best that you can, and then they turn out the way that they do, and you look back and think, well, I just wasted my life. That's not the case, but sometimes we feel that way. I think it's part of parenting and everything, but I think it is interesting. It's the last verse of some chapter in the book of Genesis where Rebekah says, if Esau takes one of the Canaanite women, then I've wasted my life. And so Jacob arrives over in that other land, and by the providence of God, begins to work for who is to be later his father-in-law, Laban. Laban has two daughters. One of them is Leah. She's the older one. The younger one is Rebekah. The other one is Rachel. And so he falls in love with Rachel, and the contract, the dowry that he was to pay, I'm not sure exactly everything that was involved in that, was that he was to work 7 years, and then he would get Rachel as his wife. And so he worked 7 years, and you know the story, I'm confident. When did Jacob learn that he had been tricked? The next morning. Aren't you thankful you've got night lights in your bedroom? You understand what I'm talking about? I mean, I just find it amazing. The events of the next morning would have been absolutely amazing to have been inside that tent that they were in. And he's married the wrong girl. And so you've got that situation and Laban said, well, you just don't understand the customs. In this part of the country, it's customary for the older daughter to marry before the younger. And so I've given you her, and now if you will do what, I'll let you have I'll let you have Rachel. You remember the story about that? If you'll work another 7 years, that's the contract. But he actually got her within a week's time, if you'll read it carefully. He had no wife, and within 7 days, 8 days, he had two wives. Now, the second wife, he got on credit. Any of you husbands understand about these wives and having a wife on credit? And so that's the kind of thing that he had. So he works another 7 years. Now then, he's evidently ready to go back, and Laban says, I'm not ready for you to leave. If you'll work for me, I will give you wages. And so the contract is, or at least the result of the contract is, that Jacob worked for 6 years to get the wages that he had. He became a rather wealthy man. Whenever you read about when he was coming back to meet Esau, he's not in poverty by any means. Laban changes Jacob's wages 10 different times, rewrites the contract. Well, he'd rewritten the contract about the wife and gotten away with that, and so he changes his wages 10 times over that 6-year period of time. That's almost every 6 months, maybe every 7 or 8 months, he changes the wages. And the original argument was all of the cattle or sheep that are of this nature will belong to you, and the coloration and the others that are, hey Kelly, how you doing? And all of the coloration of the others will belong to me. And so it's rather interesting to read that. I don't want to go into details. We'd get a discussion started. I don't want to chase that rabbit. But Jacob is just getting richer and richer. I want to show you a verse in relationship to this, and that's in chapter 30, Genesis chapter 30, verse 25. When starting, and it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Jacob said to Laban, "Send me away that I may go to my own place and to my country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me go, for you know my service for which I have done for you." And here's the statement. Laban said to him, "Please stay, if I have found favor in your eyes, for I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me for your sake." I want you to think about that. I have learned by experience. Here's an individual who is an idolater. He doesn't fully understand the God of heaven. And he's looking at a godly man and seeing how blessed this godly man is. And he has decided that God blesses individuals. How did he learn that God blesses individuals? I have learned by experience. That ought to teach you something. When you're a teenager, when you're, a junior in college or some place like that, you don't have a lot of life's experience. But can you not right now in your life look back and so many things happened, as we would say, accidentally? We have good luck. And so we have been blessed and blessed and blessed. Here's a pagan who says, "I can look at your life and by experience I can learn some things." Now, did a godly man ever do this? David says, I was young, but I am old. And I have never seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. We ought to look back in our lives and see decisions that were made and circumstances that came about in our lives, that the only answer is God was there. God made it happen. Now, the reality is, if there is no direct revelation from God that God said, "I did make that happen," the Bible language to describe that is perhaps. Whenever that slave had run away from Philemon, the slave's name was Onesimus, and he came to Rome, and Paul converted him and then sends him back to Philemon to carry the letter back that Paul has written. Some people would say, "Well, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that God brought those two together so that he might be able to find truth." Paul says, "Perhaps he's departed from you." And somebody says, "Well, I just wish I knew." No, you don't. Because if you knew, then you'd wonder, "Well, why did he help me over here? If he helped me in situation A, why did he help me in situation B?" And I'll tell you what it does. If you look at everything that's happening in your life as a perhaps situation, that makes every day unbelievably exciting. You'll meet some new people today in all likelihood. If you go out shopping at all, there'll be somebody that you'll meet today. If you buy gas or whatever happens in your life today, you're going to run into some people. Perhaps that person is looking for truth, and who knows, but perhaps God has brought you to that person at that place at that time for that very purpose of leading them to the Lord. If that doesn't excite you, I don't know what it'll take. Your children are getting married. Perhaps they're marrying this person because that's the one person that'll help that son or daughter of yours go to heaven. Perhaps. And that makes it exciting to me. Now, Mordecai said, who knows? Who knows but what? God has put Esther on the throne that she might save the Jews. He didn't say, now God put you here for this very purpose, and you need to know that God put you here for this very purpose. And he says, but perhaps God's put you here at this place for this time. And then he adds something else. But if you don't do what God has you in that place to do for that, you're going to die. But God will bring deliverance in another way. And so if that person you meet today, you let the Lord down by not seizing an opportunity that's obvious before you to talk to them about spiritual matters, if God brought you to that person for that person at that time, at that place, that's not going to frustrate God. There are a lot of other people he can bring into that person's life. But the point I'm trying to make is that we ought to be able to look back in our lives and say, there's no other explanation other than God that this happened in my life. And that's exactly where Laban was in relationship to this. And so you can say, as did David, some of you can, I was young, but now I'm old. And here's what I've seen in my life. I believe that's a legitimate way of looking at life. And I know that makes life exciting. It's been remarkable. I will say this, maybe I should not. When I was in the seventh grade, it suddenly dawned on me that who you marry determines whether you're going to be happy or not. And so I started in the seventh grade praying every night, God, help me find somebody who will be the person that will help me to go to heaven, help me to be happy on this earth. And I prayed that all the way through the seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, and first year of college, still praying it. Second year of college, still praying it. Now, I had been dating girl down in Alabama for 4 years. And the night before Judy and I got married, I prayed, God, if this is a mistake, and I'm so blinded by love, open my eyes. Now, when you've been married 55 years and have had a 55 year of a honeymoon, I have learned by experience, God is good. And what we pray makes a difference in our lives. When our daughter got married, she married this boy from Alabama, our oldest child. And I'd not met Mark's parents, John and Joan, until I guess it was at the dinner for the wedding, Judy, was that when it was? Or we were at some dinner or something when we finally met John and Joan. And I remember saying to them, I'm glad to finally meet you. I've been praying for you for 18 years. That's something. And that's not any credit and honor to me. I think that's just what life is all about. And we need to live our lives conscious of God. Now then, my phone just beeped, and it should not because I'd already turned it off, so I don't know what's going on here. Why don't I just go ahead and turn it all the way off instead of just turning the vibration part of it on? There are two ways of looking at life. One is in the immediate situations in our lives. And the other is to back away with an ability to see the larger picture. We tend to only look at the smallness of the picture of what's happening in our lives. I think you'll understand where I'm headed with this in a minute. But the story of Joseph occupies in the book of Genesis as many chapters as the life of Abraham. That's significant. I know why Abraham is in the Bible. I know why we know all of this about Abraham, the father of the Jewish nation, and so many of the promises that were made, and especially that threefold promise made to Abraham, forms the entire structure of the Bible. It is the story of the Bible. I'll make of you a great nation, put you in a great land, and I'll send a great Savior. But when you get to Genesis chapter 37, maybe even before that, because we read about the birth of Joseph, we just now back in chapter 30. Well, when you get to chapter 37, the whole spotlight of the book of Genesis turns totally away from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And for the rest of the book of Genesis, the spotlight is on a 17-year-old boy down there in the land of Egypt. And if you'll just recognize, we know as much, we probably know more of the details of the life of this 17-year-old boy than we know the details of the life of Abraham. That's significant. Why is that in the Bible? God could just as easily have said, when you get to about chapter 36, and there was famine in the land of Israel, and Jacob and his descendants moved or left that land and went down to the land of Egypt, where there was an abundance of food, where they stayed for 400 years. Exodus chapter 1, and I finished the book of Genesis. It now only has 36 chapters plus 2 verses. And it came to pass that while they were there, they multiplied and they became slaves. And they cried out to God, and God raised up a deliverer in keeping with the promises he had made. And nothing of the historical continuity of that nation would be changed. But that's not the way God chose it. God backs away from the life of Joseph and looks down into the life of Joseph and gives details after details to illustrate what's stated in this book over and over in the latter part of the book of Genesis. But God was with him all the way through those last chapters of the book of Genesis. Is this phrase, God was with him. God was with him. God was with him. If I have any understanding at all as to why these 13 chapters are here, it is to give us an assurance that God is with us even when we cannot see God being with us. Joseph has it made. He is his father's favorite son. Now, he's his father's favorite son because he is the son of Jacob's favorite wife. He's married to Rachel, and he's married to Leah. It's rather interesting that biblical names oftentimes have definition. And one of the definitions of the name Leah is cow. He wanted a wife and he got a cow. Now, that sounds odd in our culture until you go back to that culture and recognize how dependent they were on cattle. That's not, you know, that's not necessarily a derogatory name to give. There's sometimes you'll see another definition, but I just find that once I learn a weird fact like that, I can't get it out of my mind. If it's in my mind, it's likely going to come out of my mouth. And so he has this child by the name of Joseph. He's still over there with Laban when Joseph is born. I believe it is a truth that Rachel's other son, Benjamin, was born after they left Laban. So Jacob is working for Laban, well, for 20 years. 7 years for Leah, 7 years for Rachel, and 6 years for wages. I want to ask you this. How much older was Reuben, the firstborn, than Joseph? Can you figure that out? Well, let's do some subtracting, okay? How many children did he have the first 7 years he was over there? At zero. Wasn't he married? He has zero children.
After he married Rachel, he had 10.
What?
After he married Rachel, he had 10, right?
Well, we're talking about the years, okay? No. Yes, he had 10, but by three women, okay? And that's another thing. Well, Leah did what Sarah did for Abraham. It says, have children. Actually, I think Rachel started that. That's amazing. She has six children. Help me with this, June. She has six children, does she not? And then stops having children. And so Rachel says, take my handmaiden. I want to have children. I want to give you a child. I'm not going to have a child. So she gives her handmaiden, Rachel, gives Jacob a handmaiden. He has two children by her. Leah sees what happened. And so Leah says, here, you take my handmaiden, has two children by her. And then finally Jacob is born. I believe that's the way that works out. It's an interesting tidbit. But let's get back to how many teenagers you had in that house. He's there for 20 years, and when he leaves, he has 10 children. What's the possible age of the oldest one? Not 20. Because the first 7 years, he didn't have any children. He was there 7 years before you remember, he worked 7 years, didn't get a wife. And so you subtract that 7 from that 20, he's there for 13 years. How much older is, could that firstborn be than Joseph? Well, is it 13 years? Am I right about, have I missed the math here? You're looking at me like you don't know what I'm saying. But it fits in my mind. He's there 13 years and he has 10 children. And if he had the first one at the start of the 13th year and the other one at the last of the 13 years. Now, this is about to change your picture. Whenever you think about Joseph having, 11 brothers, all of a sudden, Reuben is 30 years of age, and here's little Joseph, and he's got the coat of many colors. It was not that way at all. There's a 13-year age span between Joseph and his oldest brother. And so when he leaves after 20 years, Reuben is only 13 years of age. That's remarkable. Now then, there is a gap by the time he gets the coat of many colors, but you can almost do the math and figure out how long they were over there before he was sold down to the land of Egypt. I just find it interesting to try to put yourself in that. Here's the thing I find most interesting. How do you feed 13 teenagers? You understand what I'm talking about? I mean, at one time he has almost, when those boys are growing up in that house, I said 13, I should have said 11. And how do you feed 11 teenagers at one time? To me, that is just remarkable. He had to be a wealthy man if you'll stop and think about it. But he was prosperous. And he made a mistake. He made a mistake in that he had a favorite son. But he had a favorite son because he was a favorite son who was a favorite son. His grandfather had a favorite son. And his grandmother had a favorite son. His mother had a favorite son. His father had a favorite son. Would it surprise you that Jacob has a favorite son? And so to show his favoritism, he gives him a coat of many colors. I'm not sure exactly what that coat looked like. I think it probably did not look like Dolly Parton's coat of many colors made out of feed bags, if that's that country and western song. It was a beautiful garment. Now then, Joseph has some dreams. And in those dreams, the brothers interpret the dreams as meaning that we will bow down and worship you. We'll bow down and worship you. Both of them say that. And if we go into details, we'll never finish the book of Genesis. But both of those dreams indicate that. And they called him the dreamer. Anybody ever call you dummy or a fatso, or what nickname did you have in your family? Anybody have a nickname in here? I remember, yes. Not even want to ask what that nickname was. Remember one person had the nickname Stinky. That's an unusual name for a nickname. It is remarkable. But you stop and think about it. Here's the dreamer. And so Joseph is sent to find out where his brothers are and how they're faring. He's at home. His brothers are out in the field working. You want to put yourself in Reuben's place? And you're out there dealing with smelly sheep and wayward cattle. And Joseph is sleeping in every morning. Now I'm making that part of it up. But he's at home. And so his brothers are out working. And so Jacob says, you go see how your brothers are doing. Well, they see him coming. And their immediate inclination is to kill him. I want you to stop at this point and become Joseph and focus in on where Joseph's emotions have got to be. They're going to kill me. And had it not been for the intervention of an older brother, they would have killed him. The older brother said, "All right, let's put him in a pit. Let's put him in a pit." Intending later to come back and to free Joseph and send him back home. But when this caravan of people called by two nationalities, Ishmaelites, descendants of Ishmael, and Midianites, descendants of Midian, and Midian was one of the eight sons of Abraham. Abraham married Keturah after Sarah was dead and had six children. And so a combination of his descendants through Ishmael and his descendants through Midian carried Joseph down into Egypt, where he's sold to be a slave. 17 years of age. How you feeling, Joseph? Well, perhaps his thoughts were, my father is rich. I don't care what Potiphar paid for me, my dad will come down here just any day and buy me back so I can go back home. But a day becomes a week. The week becomes a month. The month becomes a year. And Joseph is a servant. And the woman in the house, Potiphar's wife, tries to get Joseph to commit fornication with him. You're 17 years of age. Your family's forgotten about you, or you don't know what's happened. You're lonely, and all of a sudden, there's an opportunity. And Joseph says, I cannot sin against my God. And so the woman, Joseph runs out of the house. The woman grabs Joseph's garments and tells her husband Potiphar, Joseph tried to rape me. He tried to come on to me anyway. And now Joseph is in prison. You want to look at the little picture? And then bad ever happened to you because you're trying to live right and do right? Yeah, it happens. And everything's gone wrong in his life. And we know how long he was in prison. We only know of a couple of events that happened in prison. Who was it? It was the butler, the cupbearer of the king, and the baker of the king that come into the prison. They have a dream, and Joseph, by the power of God, is able to interpret the dreams. And one of the dreams was that the cupbearer of the king would be restored to the king in 3 days' time. And the agreement is, when you get back before the king, tell them about me down here in prison. Well, 3 days comes and nothing happens. A week, a month. I don't know where in that interval in the life of Joseph when he's in prison, I don't know where this all occurred. But Joseph is in that prison because the cupbearer forgets about Joseph. He's in that prison for 13 years. You want to put that in your life? How old are you? The earliest remembrance of what's happened in your life? Six? If Joseph is 17 down there, when he goes to the land of Egypt and he's been in prison, he's now 30 years of his life. He's been in prison more years that he can remember than he was in his father's house. Now, he was actually there long in his father's house, but we don't have much remembrance prior to 5 or 6 years of age. He doesn't remember that at all. And that's when the Bible just keeps saying, but God was with him, but God was with him. Finally, Pharaoh has a dream. And the cupbearer says, oh, yes, I remember. You've got a man in prison that's able to interpret dreams. And at 30 years of age, Joseph interprets the king's dreams, that there will be 7 years of an abundance, and then there will be 7 years of famine. So they have 7 years of abundance. How old does that make Joseph? He's 37. When's the last time he saw his brothers? When's the last time he saw his dad? 20 years ago. 17, when he goes down to the land of Egypt, and when he's brought out before the king to interpret the king's dream, he's now 37 years of age. That's remarkable, isn't it? If you don't put these numbers here, it's hard, difficult for us to understand what's happening in his life and emotionally what's happening to him. Now then, it's not that his brothers come after the first year, because they've had an abundance of good up in their land also. So they got enough for that. Next year, it's the year after that. Joseph is now 38 years of age. And all of a sudden, in come his brothers. That's remarkable, isn't it? Can you imagine how everybody's changed? If Joseph is 37, 38 years of age, how old does that make Reuben? Well, if that 13 years fits in there, Reuben's 50 plus years of age. And in walk his brothers. All of them except Benjamin come in. Yes.
Are those years the same as what we consider a year?
Yes. The Bible says, Genesis 1, the sun and the moon are put there to measure days and years. So those were years, actual years. Now, he recognizes his brothers. What's inside his heart? I think it is remarkable when Joseph finally reveals to his brothers who he is. Two statements are made. One statement is the statement made by his brothers. And the other is the statement made by Joseph. You know Joseph's first statement? Is my father still alive? Is my father still alive? You see, Jacob and Esau, I believe, were 60 years of age when they had the disagreement, either 60 or 40 years of age. I believe they're 60 years of age. All of our little Bible stories, we have a little boy and two brothers coming in there. We're talking about grown men, 40 years of age. How old does that make his daddy? Well, he's 60 years older than Joseph is. That's remarkable. But that's the bail. That's first bail. You know his brother's first statement? After Joseph said, is my daddy still alive? You know what his brother's first statement is? Don't kill us. That shows you the heart of the brothers. And that shows you the heart of Joseph. Friends, be quick. We don't know how old. There's only one woman in the Bible who we know how old. I do not know. She died right after Benjamin was born, and it's right after they get back into the promised land. But we don't know how. We don't know when she died. There's only one woman in the Bible. The Bible tells her age. Is that remarkable? Of all the women, you learn soon enough, and God knew it a long time before we did, don't ever talk about a woman's age. And that was Sarah. Sarah was 127 years of age when she died. All right, let's get to our seats.